one I really remember from that time was this woman sort of like in these three poses, and they'd put an asterisk by bits of her body. And then sort of to the right on the asterisk, it was saying actual hips, actual thighs, actual bum. And that to me is a seminal moment for the intimates and lingerie industry.
That's Lorna Hoare, WGSN's Director of Fashion, talking about today's topic, which is all about underwear. This often contentious category has historically been very polarised, split between the fun, read sexy, and the functional. But the smalls category has come on in leaps and bounds. We're going to chart the shift towards inclusiveness, review the latest trends, and look to the future. I'm your host, Francesca Mustam, VP of Fashion for WGSN. And joining me today, we have WGSN Director of Fashion, Lorna Hoare, and our Senior Strategist for Womenswear, Sophia Martellini. Now, controversially for a trend forecaster, I'd actually like to start this discussion by looking backwards. So let's just cast our minds back, even just a decade or so, and think about what underwear looked like and felt like during that time versus where we are now. This category has been through astronomical change and innovation to where we are today, which is what we'd like to discuss in this podcast. So pull on your big girl pants and let's get started. I'd like to begin by asking each of you, what have been your seminal moments for underwear during that time? Lorna, I'm going to come to you first, please.
Good question. I mean, it's such a long time, so we cast our minds back, and I suppose I would say Dove 2004, which wasn't even an underwear moment, but it had colossal long-term impact for the underwear industry. So yeah, a very big campaign that branded around body positivity and women's confidence about their bodies. Essentially, that was what it was about. And they interviewed 3,200 women, I think, and they all stated how they felt, whether they felt confident, what they felt they looked like. And then they kind of came up with this amazing campaign. And just remember the images. There was this one image of the one that really sticks in my mind for the underwear industry was a woman in sort of quite joyous poses, a very famous campaign when all the women are all wearing white, lots of different sized women and lots of different ethnicities and their real bodies. And then they sort of did little mini campaigns. And the one I really remember from that time was this woman sort of like in these three poses. And they'd put an asterisk by bits of her body. And then sort of to the right on the asterisk, it was saying actual hips, actual thighs, actual bum. That to me is a seminal moment for the intimates and lingerie industry.
Absolutely. I totally remember those adverts. They were all over the tube in London, weren't they? I really remember that. Suddenly you saw women as they really were. It was definitely a big one. Any others from you?
I suppose further on, and the big hitter is Aerie. So that was 2014, where they came out with this statement that they would essentially only use, again, real women. And mainly the bigger thing was no retouching of models' pictures or their bodies, particularly no reshaping of the models' pictures. So, and women of all sizes being used and untouched in that way. And that campaign, if you think about when that was, it was 2014, your Gen Z consumer was just coming up to sort of peak interest in lingerie. So they were about, I don't know, the sort of 18, 19. So we're just getting into their biggest lingerie underwear buying years. And I think that was a big breakthrough, that kind of, you know, that generation with a different viewpoint, and that campaign really did change everything. And that brand has been doing things like, you know, at that point in time, something probably wouldn't happen now. Women were posting pictures of themselves in their underwear on the Aerie site. So just an incredible mindset shift for underwear companies.
Absolutely. It really did change how women saw themselves, and that whole sort of psyche really, really shifted during that time, didn't it? In such a like positive and celebratory way as well. Sophia, could I come to you next then?
Sure, of course. Lorna, those are really great examples. I think for me, there are two major moments that I would also like to highlight. So first, of course, Rihanna's Savage X Fenty launch in 2018. So when they had their first New York Fashion Week show, I think was a pivotal moment for the category to start to become really a lot more size inclusive. And I think their show really changed the narrative of what a lingerie show could and should look like. I think before that, we, of course, had a bunch of lingerie show examples that we all can think about that focused on supermodels. And that's the only thing that we saw on the runways. And I think Rihanna did a really great job in not only being more size inclusive, but also putting lingerie as a high fashion category, which we continue to see through to this day, the influence of intimates into the runways. And then I would say the next big mass level wave came from Kim Kardashian's Skims in 2019. So the brand launched bodysuits, bras, shapewear, and a very extensive size range as well. But they also did a wide range of skin-inspired colors, so various tones of beiges and browns, which a lot of brands, of course, have now taken on. We still see some lack of when it comes to different shades on quote-unquote neutral or nude colors. And I also think that they had a major role in normalizing shapewear, again, making it a bit more fashionable, also making it for everyday wear through lighter control options.
Yeah, shape had all been about like, it had been about essentially just squeezing everything in. It had sort of a mindset of the 18th century corset. And I think that's the mindset we actually broke at that point.
Yeah, and something that you would wear hidden, like you wouldn't want people to know that you're wearing.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. I remember, like dressing up to go out and with friends, and the report if you were wearing your like compression sort of underwear to get into, you know, a bodycon dress was, oh, I was dancing with someone and my thighs were just so hot because of all the extra heat that was being generated by that compressional fabric.
It's also that those connotations with Bridget Jones, right? And just the kind of slapstick comedy of that garment. And that's what people were thinking of when they thought of shapewear before Kim Kardashian came along and completely changed actually how women thought about that category. Which probably brings me quite nicely onto what I would say my sort of biggest moment was for underwear. And it was definitely the pandemic, because I remember joining my first work meeting in lockdown with no bra on. And, you know, that kind of shift from when you kind of got home pre-pandemic and it's like, take your shoes off, take your bra off, because bras are uncomfortable, right? And it's like, if you don't have to wear one, you don't wear one, exactly. Whereas now, actually, the bras in my wardrobe are heavily skewed to non-underwired bras that are a lot more comfortable. So I am pleased to report that today I am wearing a bra, but that I don't feel uncomfortable. And I think that this, for me, just completely changed like how women thought about bras during that time period. And, you know, as we've spoken about much at WJSN, what it essentially changed was the benchmark for comfort. And that, of course, didn't just relate to bras. It also related to shoes and jeans and waistbands in general, but it set a completely new benchmark for comfort, and suddenly the fashion industry was having to run to catch up with what that expectation was, especially as we came out the other side. It's like, how do you persuade these consumers back into these garments, whether it's a pair of high heel shoes or a bra, when their idea of what's comfortable has fundamentally changed? So thinking about that then, and that kind of innovation that we've seen around comfort and how bras relate to sort of fit in the body, I'd like to sort of explore a bit of that now. So Sophia, do you have any thoughts on how we've sort of seen that shift really happen?
Yeah, I think it really is about DEI, and there's so much to say around that. And of course, that body inclusivity and diversity in both product offering and image representation, it's super crucial. But DEI has to go beyond it. So looking at different genders, looking at different age groups, and even lifestyles. So with that being so front of mind for consumers, I think that brands should start to really incorporate wellness fabrics in a more inclusive, accessible, affordable way, ensuring that they're responding to specific needs of different markets, which of course include plus size, like we talked about, but also include things like modest wear or even the different life stages that vulva owners go through, from everything from pregnancy to menopause and literally everything in between. And then another direction we have is, of course, gender inclusivity, right? So, which is a tricky, very difficult concept for the intimates category, because different genders genetically have different body shapes, and intimates is such a form-fitted, functional-first product. But we do see a rise in stretch body wear, which can accommodate these various shapes, which has opened up a lot the possibilities. So at a high-end level, for instance, we have the Italian brand Andrea Adamo, which uses a lot of ribbed and cut-out body wear style on different genders and on different body sizes and shapes. So there's a ton of other brands that I could reference here as well. And at WGSN, we have created a design capsule for suggesting same style, but with different fit options. For example, a form-fitting soft brief that you could have it with a pouch front, or a flat front, front version designed for people of different gender or non-binary activities. So you literally could just like choose your fit option without the need to talk about gender at all. What do you think, Lauren? I would love to hear your thoughts. I know you have a lot of opinions.
I think that all resonates. Fit is the other revolution that I think we're in the middle of. When you look at that moment that Cheska just talked about around the COVID moment, where we sort of abandoned our bras for comfort, that really sparked off the fit revolution. And I think, you know, back then there were like 26 bra size options in the UK and 14 in the US. And that had remained, you know, fairly solid year after year. And it was kind of, you know, all based on that early 20th century grading exercise. And we are in another space now. You know, we saw a sort of the direct-to-consumer brands of about a decade ago introducing themselves into the market, and they sort of experimented with things like half sizes. But that resulted in far too many options and created problems around the actual commercial viability of producing that much stock. But since then, I think the bigger brands, the real market leaders like the Triumphs and the Chantels, they've just come into the market and really thought about it from a smarter sizing system point of view. So this is like, you know, sizes that can cover off via stretch fabric technology and data-driven grading systems, one size to fit more sizes, essentially. And we are in the middle of this, and I think it's just going to continue to evolve.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the kind of flexibility that we're seeing in sizing, but also things like having that idea that even one woman is not one size, and how you get those natural fluctuations in size during different times of the month, and that these bras are sort of responding to that and using the technical and fabric innovation to be able to kind of give the consumer something that kind of works with the body, rather than, I guess, previously it would have been very much working against it. Yeah, like I said, it feels like the lingerie industry is just so much more in tune with women and women's bodies now. I think this is probably quite a nice segue to take us on to that sort of materiality and innovation side of it, because this is something that we're tracking an awful lot of at WGSN and is a really exciting space. I mean, the list of different fabric innovations that kind of take the lingerie industry from fit and shape, as you've said, much more into other types of solutions and solution wear. there. That list is pretty endless. But Lorna, I wonder if you could kind of give us some highlights from that list and some of the things that we're really looking at WGSN.
More heat and more moisture in the atmosphere. So then you're talking about climate adaptive, which is thermoregulating, cooling, sweat wicking, which is really targeting growing need in hotter, humid climates and hot, dry climates and cold weather climates from a third thermoregulating point of view. And we've talked a lot about the cost of living crisis that, you know, so much of the world has been going through. And for those parts of the world that have to either have air conditioning on for extreme climates of extreme heat, or they have to have more heating on because, and the cost of that is getting more difficult to manage. It is really important that these fabrics can be part of the solution. And I think that's what we're starting to see brands really pick up on these fabrics and also work them into solutions for particular regional markets. So there are fabrics out there now that can essentially, they've been tested, and it means you can lower your air conditioning by 1.5 degrees. Or it'll keep you warmer in extreme situations of cold by a certain amount. And obviously, a lot of these fabrics come from other industries. They've been essentially developed for industrial situations or for extreme outdoor situations, or maybe even military situations. But the changes in climate are really starting to make them of interest to the underwear industry.
We're probably quite a good sample of this today, right? Because Lorna and I are based in the UK, where in parts of the UK it has been snowing today. And Sophia, do you want to share where you are today?
Yes, I am in Brazil, and very polar opposite of that. Last week we had record-breaking heat waves. So our temperature was way above 40s in some places of the country, almost into their 50s. So that really does speak to the need for products that will respond to that and will help us stay comfortable and dry and just feeling okay, because it's hard to survive in such hot or extremely cold weather.
You're listening to the WGSN Create Tomorrow podcast. And in this episode, we're talking about intimates. That's the fashion category more commonly known to most of you as your underwear. I'm Francesca Mustam, VP of Fashion for WGSN, and my guests today are WGSN Director of Fashion Lorna Hall and our Senior Strategist of Womenswear, Sophia Martellini. We surely cannot do a podcast on intimates and underwear without talking about the bra that recently broke the internet, right? And for those of you who maybe have been living under a rock and are unaware of what I'm referring to, I am, of course, referring to the Kim Kardashian's nipple bra with its fake nipple. For those women who want to go for a sort of cold room, erect nipple sort of aesthetic. Now, of course, that advert came under a lot of criticism particularly from an environmental point of view, for making light of the climate crisis. But putting that to one side, it is a really interesting example of that polarization. And actually, just kind of a couple of weeks before that, Andrea Bell, who is our VP of Insight, and I had been messaging backwards and forwards, as we do, with various sort of memes and posts from Instagram that we just kind of constantly back and forward to one another. And one of us had sent the other one, I can't remember who it was who saw it first, a faux belly button. And the idea of this faux belly button is that you sort of apply it higher than your real belly button, and it has the sort of visual effect of, assuming one covers up your real belly button, I don't think it's like a dual belly button type of scenario, but if you're wearing like a higher waist skirt or trousers and you have this like faux belly button on show, it has the visual effect of making your legs look longer. And as part of this conversation, Andrea and I were like, well, what next? It's going to be fake nipples to make your boobs look perkier. And no sooner had those words left our lips than, of course, there where it was, the nipple bra. So yeah, Lorna, you and I kind of went out the other day, didn't we, and snoop around the shops to see what we can find. And do you want to share with our listeners some of the stuff that we uncovered in the underwear department?
I learned a lot. In an hour, I learned a lot.
And you already knew a lot.
I knew a lot. And now, yeah, I learned a lot. So we found the concealer, the nipple concealer, which is, you know, what you would expect, I suppose, a little disc that conceals your nipple and covers it up. We found the pasties, which I had been woefully ignorant of. I'll put my hand up to that, which seems like it has a dual purpose in that it's like a bigger concealer and it also lifts the bra as well. So it's doing the job of bra tapes in the market, I suppose, but also sort of slightly shaping your breast and also lifting it. Obviously giving you, if you're worried about, and I know people do worry about their nipples showing through in clothing, it also essentially negates that being an issue. So they were just big bits of silicone in flesh colors.
Yeah, I can remember also you were filling me in on, Lorna is an avid consumer of Korean pop culture, and you were telling me actually about some of the men in Korean, was it K-pop or was it Korean soaps?
Yeah, it's cultural, obviously. And, you know, so this is a very big deal when we talk about this stuff, you know, in terms of it being a market, because there's a big market there already for these kind of products, because there is, it's a modest culture to a certain extent. But what I hadn't really realized until I'd done a bit of, you know, got way down into the weeds of YouTube, as I tend to do when I was watching a Korean variety show, and it was male comedians, and one of the male comedians essentially dropped his nipple cover. It fell out of his shirt, and he was already wearing, I think, a cardigan and a shirt, and he just moved in a certain way, and they were all taking the mickey out of him, his sort of compatriots. And then I did some background reading on it and realized that this is actually quite a big thing. And I think the most interesting thing about this is, one, that a lot of this stuff is inherently cultural, and obviously we only see it through the lens of our own culture. And two, I think what is quite interesting about these products is that there are changes in lifestyle, and this is the thing we track all the time, right, that bring those products that have and that market into a new region in a way that you don't expect. And one of the things I think that sort of makes that something that probably there is a bit of a market for in Western markets is around the runner's culture, and how, you know, men's nipples do, you know, need to be protected when they're doing more extreme or more distance running. Then these things become more acceptable because they're being worn in a certain way that's acceptable to mainstream male culture. And then you start to see that actually there is a sensitivity. Also, some people have more sticky out nipples than innie nipples, as we all know, it's like belly buttons. So, and then because these things are established in one area of male culture, they tend to seep into others. And that might be just, you know, a smoother look in a body clinging t-shirt for a man. So then that's how you see these products start to grow and become more mainstream.
I think this is really interesting, actually, because this kind of speaks to as well, it's the men's market. And of course, we haven't really spoken about the men's market up to this point. We've talked about gender inclusivity. And, you know, Sophia, you were able to kind of share some of the innovations that we're looking at there. But actually, when you think of the men's underwear market and kind of going back to those kind of Dove and Aerie campaigns, that moment never happened really for menswear. And you just don't see men's bodies being presented in that very real and relatable way that we do with women. And I think it'd be interesting to hear from any guys out there on like how they really kind of feel about that. How do they feel about the fact that when they go to buy underwear, they're inevitably picking up a packet which has got a male model with a six pack on it. And it's highly unlikely that they're really going to sort of see a realistic sort of dad bod type of body image representation for their market. So, Sophia, did you have anything that you wanted to kind of weigh in on the great nipple debate?
Yeah, I think to Lorna's point about being something extremely related to the culture is super true. And it's ironic a little bit because in the US, in Europe, even in Latin America, I think that we've been seeing the free the nipple kind of movement happening for a while. And a lot of women trying to normalize the like nipple exposure in some way, either through the naked dress, quote unquote, so essentially sheer dresses worn over nothing, or even the shape of your breast being visible, like not being covered by a bra. And again, ironically or not, Kendall Jenner is a huge supporter of the Free the Nipple movement. She always posts about it. And then Kim Kardashian goes and does a different kind of Free the Nipple, I guess. So she... Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a highly polarizing, of course, and controversial product. She's very good at marketing. Her campaign got under fire, but she probably knew that would happen. And honestly, there probably is a market for the fake nipple. I mean, there used to be in the 70s, right? Like it was something that we've seen before, not for a very long time. So there probably is a market for women that want to free the nipple, but in a fake way. So yeah, I just find it all very kind of funny, I guess, and super interesting from a culture and lifestyle perspective.
Yeah, I think you kind of raised some good points there. And I'd be interested in your perspective, actually, on how you see this impacting women's wear more generally, because obviously your sort of main role at WGSN is our senior strategist of women's wear. And the idea of kind of the types of bra and underwear that you wear can really make or break the kind of dresses and the blouses. So do you see any impact there and kind of opportunity?
Yeah, absolutely. We have actually been seeing the influence of lingerie intimates into apparel, into like high fashion, trend-led fashion. So we have everything from slip dresses, which are of course inspired by sleepwear, to more recently the no pant trend, which is essentially mainly celebrities, some models, some influencers wearing extremely short shorts that are actually hot pants or just plain on knickers and a top, a sweater, a t-shirt or a shirt, and going out often with thighs, but often with not. So we have been seeing how the intimate market have been entering high fashion territory for a while now. And that's something that should continue to happen.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting how the things you've just mentioned are so linked to that, the sort of cultural issues that and talking points that we hear. You know, there was a big debate last year on Gen Z and their attitude to appropriate office yes. wear. And that really speaks to that kind of bralette under the blazer and that sort of clash of the generations and clash of kind of the rules around what is appropriate anymore. It's such an interesting space. And I think what we've uncovered just in this short chat is how the intimates market is so integrally sort of like wound into culture and the way we express ourselves and how it sort of does reel itself back into fashion in so many ways.
Absolutely. And I also feel like I just need to clarify for our UK listeners, when we say the no pants trend, we're talking about trousers, not underwear.
Sorry.
And probably on that
sorry
on
about
the
that.
Shelf.
We good save, Cheska. Good yeah. save.
Thank you to my guest, Director of Fashion, Lorna Hall, and our Senior Strategist of Women's Wear, Sophia Martellini, for taking the time to speak to me today. If you're a WGSN subscriber, you'll find reports covering the topics that we discussed on our fashion platform, including our latest seasonal forecast for autumn-winter 25-26. If you want to find out how to subscribe, head over to wgsn.com to discover how you can get access to our service. We're constantly publishing new content, focusing on how we can design a better, brighter future for our industries. And these include food and drink, interiors, beauty, fashion, and consumer tech. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you can catch the CEO of WGSN, Carla Buzashi, next week on our other podcast, Lives of Tomorrow, where we'll be looking at the future of trend forecasting.